You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
It's going down right here.
We're back on Fantasy Sports Today on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Mike Blewett and Kevin Walsh. 1 hour down. You got the chance to listen to that interview. We talked some Olympics. We'll clean up the Olympics in this segment, and then we're going to transition over to NFL. We got Rich Sermonello coming up later this hour. He's at Rich Sermonello on Twitter. That's, let me spell it for you, because it is at Rich Sermonello. It's C-I-R-M-I-N-I-E-L-L-O. But we tweeted out his stuff, which you can find
on our handle. Rich didn't follow me back.
At FNTSY Radio. He will.
I might have to call him out.
Up in arms about Twitter follows and all that kind of stuff. Also, when you get on here, you shouldn't really look at your mentions if you have a tweet that takes off. I've done that before. I've made the mistake of doing that before. I'm not a great Twitter follow. I'll be totally honest, because I don't tweet all that much. But
don't undersell yourself. In any event,
that's how you find where I am and how to listen and all that kind of stuff. So at FNTSY Radio, I'm at Mike Blewett. Kevin is at the Kevin Walsh. Rich will be on at 10:40. We'll talk college football. As Kevin said, he's a big-time expert. And I wanted to get your thoughts, because we put up a poll, and what has been your favorite Olympics moment? There's tons for different people. In fact, one of the ones that I thought was great was the American relay cross-country skiers winning gold, because they came from behind in like the last 100 meters to win the first ever cross-country gold for us, I believe. In any event, that was really cool. USA hockey winning gold, US curling winning gold, watching snowboarding. I probably should to put the cross-country skiing up there, but there's so many moments I had to put in an other so that you can tell us, tweet us back. But what has been your favorite moment, Kevin?
Without a doubt, the women's hockey thing. That's what I'll remember when people say, what do you remember the 2018 Winter Olympics? Be like, oh, when the women's hockey team won gold, first time, 20 years. I was watching the shootout in my basement. I was Snapchatting the whole thing, giving live commentary. It was brilliant. I loved it.
Yeah, it's awesome.
What was your top moment?
That is, mine is that. No, well, mine is the hockey as well, but I do think that those other moments, the cross-country skiing was very cool. I think it's awesome that the men's curling won gold, and I know people are saying, those guys aren't athletes, and it's just a game, and there's all kinds of negative stuff. The reality was they were 2-4 in the round robin, and then they won a whole bunch of games straight in order to run the table and win the gold. I think that's really cool. I thought Shaun White winning snowboarding gold was great. Michaela Schifrin, Lindsey Vonn, lots of other the loser guy, Dan Madster, I believe his name is. He won a silver, which are, I think, our highest medal in that event. There's a lot of different ones to pull, but I do really think that the fact that the women were able to overcome Canada after 20 years is what is going to stand out. Pete, I assume that's your favorite moment as well.
Oh, yeah. The redemption on ice, as they're calling it,
that's a good one.
Definitely my favorite moment. I want to bring up one moment, though, that doesn't have to do with USA, but I thought was really cool when Germany and Canada tied for gold in the bobsled. I thought that was a really
cool
moment.
That was awesome.
That's fire. I didn't even know that happened.
Yeah, Germany was waiting on the podium, kind of seeing if Canada was going to beat them in the bobsled, and they wind up with the same exact time, 0.00 across the board when it came to time difference. So they tied for the gold medal, and to see the excitement on both of the teams' faces was actually a pretty cool moment.
Yeah, I agree with that. Wow. And they seemed to be friendly too. So there wasn't any disappointment. They were all very excited that they won gold.
How does that work? Do they have extra gold medals on hand?
They do. So there's no silver given. There's two golds and a bronze, so they both stand on the top podium. And then there's no silver medal. They give out the bronze.
That's a future trivia question, if I've ever heard one.
Yeah, that's a good one. By the way, Canada did not win the gold in either men's or women's hockey. They get the silver in women's hockey, which you detailed. They got upset by Germany, which is a historically huge upset. I think the last seven times they had played, the aggregate score was like 35-11 or something like that in international competitions, and they upset Canada in the semifinals. And now Canada's, I think they're on right now, as Germany is going to go to the gold medal game for men's hockey. So last thing I would say, another cool moment. The big, by the way, all the snowboarding stuff is cool to me. It's the one thing my wife and I can totally agree on. We both like the Olympics in general, but we're both into snowboarding. Neither of us are snowboarders, but we just think it's very cool. And the last skiing thing, Pete, a non-U.S. moment, since you brought up a non-U.S. moment, the girl that from, I think she's from Czech Republic, Esther Ledecka, which we talked about last week, she won the Super G. No, it was a downhill. She won the downhill, I believe. Was it the downhill?
I don't know. You're throwing me off.
Anyway, she was. I think she was. She won the Super G. Even though she's a professional snowboarder, she has transitioned over to skiing and then won the Super G in a huge upset. She didn't expect it at all, but she was like not even on the radar. She had never finished higher than 15th in a World Cup skiing event, and she won the gold medal by 100%.
That's the one where they like had to come back and correct. When they announced it, they were like, oh, yeah, we're done. And then they're like, oh,
yes,
someone
yes,
just
that's right.
won. They're like, there are people left, right?
Yeah, there were people left to go. They just didn't expect her to place. So, Pete, you do have the shootout rules, which I wanted to clarify from earlier.
Yeah, so once the player touches the puck has to be in a forward motion toward the goal line at all times. Once the puck is shot, the play is complete. You can't score on a rebound or anything like that, and the goalie can't leave his or her crease until the player touches the puck at center ice.
Got it, until the player touches the puck. Here's an interesting thing. What if you shoot, the goalie blocks it, deflects back into your body, and then goes into the net?
Doesn't
then
count. What? Once the puck is left the blade of the player's stick and is shot, it can't be scored on a rebound. So even if it bounces off the shin guard or anything like that, I believe it's a no goal.
There you go. There's hockey guy Pete Considori coming through. Sorry about the innings rounds thing earlier. I was led astray by the internet.
Gonna be honest, it hurt a little bit.
I take the L. I take the L on that one. But it is what it is. So Katie Couric steered me wrong on the Netherlands environmental situation, and
this
then the internet
Couric's
steered
fault.
Me wrong. Yeah. So there we go. So that's it on the Olympics. I think I've had a lot of fun watching it. Closing ceremonies, I don't know when they happen. Probably tomorrow morning our time, like tomorrow night in Korea. I think that's the last day. So I don't know what big events are left, but I'll be watching right up until the end. I love the Olympics, and now I got to wait two and a half more years until we get the Summer Olympics. And that is in, where is that? I should know this.
Is it Russia? Did I just make that up?
Yeah, I think you did.
Is the World Cup in Russia? Is that what I'm thinking about?
The World Cup is going to be in Russia.
That's what I was thinking about. Do you like the World Cup?
Yeah, and then,
the World Cup guy at all?
I am. It's a lot of the air is taken out of my sails, obviously, by the fact that the U.S. stinks.
Yep.
And then Italy is out, and the Netherlands are out. So it's a very odd World Cup with two world powers plus the United States not making it. But, yes, I will watch the World Cup. I will probably watch a lot of it. In any event. As much as I can. So let's transition over to the NFL. There's no smooth way to do this in the middle of the segment, but so we're just going to start talking about it. We did talk about the Marcus Peters trade already. I think we covered that. I don't think the Chiefs would be out on him unless they're getting a first-round pick. Do the Rams think that they can afford the first-round pick this year? I would imagine they are going to have to, because I don't think the Chiefs would do this trade if the first round pick was for like next year. That's typically an NBA move, and I don't think they'd do that. He's $1.74 million towards the salary cap this season. It's one-tenth of Trumaine Johnson's cap hit this past year. So he's going to walk in free agency. They tagged him last year. They're not going to tag him now. There's been talk of them tagging Sammy Watkins, but that seems unlikely to happen because they're going to probably tag LaMarcus Joyner, safety LaMarcus Joyner, who wants a long-term deal. I don't think he'll be happy about the tag, but he will be a high-paid safety for at least this year. So, again, the Peters thing, I think it's probably going to be a first-round pick since the Rams don't have a second.
Yeah, everything that I was trying to follow along, they're assuming that just the first round by itself is not enough. I know Tony isn't high on Marcus Peters, but a lot of people within the NFL are. There are the character concerns. I think the main reason that they moved on is that they knew that they weren't going to be able to bring him back. It's kind of, I liken it a little bit into, like David Price was always traded like 2 years before his deal would expire. That way you'd get a little bit more. I think this was so they weren't trading a guy who was like or an expiring, or if they were going to have to be franchised immediately. Now the Rams have kind of some flexibility as to how they're going to approach the contract situation with Peters, and that's what's going to get them the first. Overall, I think moving the first for the Rams works because if they weren't going to pay Tremaine Johnson, which I don't think they were going to, then at 23, you probably have to take a corner anyway. Now you get Marcus Peters, yeah, who's certainly for next season going to be better than any corner you would be getting at 23. Because I think that for the Rams, it's a slam dunk move. And for the Chiefs, if you get back up into the first round now, and it's kind of, I'll say this about the Chiefs. I'm not entirely sure how much pressure they feel to win next year, right?
Because they should have a lot of pressure.
Mahomes, though? That's the one thing, is I feel like that can...
They make the playoffs, all of these moves, mm-hmm, and then say, well, we're building towards the future. They're totally capped out right now. They have the least cap room available next to your Philadelphia Eagles in the entire league. And they just traded a corner in order to make some other moves and try and get that pick back. They've also traded their starting quarterback to start the guy that they think is the future of the team. They have all these weapons on offense. They're spending the max amount of money. That means that you got to win. If you're Andy Reid, you can't just mess around. Like, if they make the playoffs and win a game or two and bow out, I don't think it would be an unsuccessful season. But they can't be saying, like, if we make the playoffs, it's a victory. They're getting to a point in the playoffs where they can't get over the hump. It's why they made this move at quarterback. They blew the game against the Titans. They blew the game last year. The Steelers beat them, but honestly, the Chiefs blew an opportunity to win that game and make the AFC Championship in 2016. So, you know, we're at this point where they need to get it done. Andy Reid, it's a repeat of his Philadelphia days now. Mm-hmm. They just keep getting to a certain point and they can't get over the hump. He's got to try to get to the Super Bowl now.
But with Mahomes, like, I think, see, the expectations for Reid, I think that's totally fair. But I don't think we could look up, if Pat Mahomes, if they're 8-8, right, we'll look at Reid and be like, that's not good. But then everybody will be like, yeah, but this is Pat Mahomes' first time ever as a starting quarterback for a year. So that's why I just feel like it's a little difficult to definitively say, if this team doesn't reach X, then it's a huge failure. Like last year, if they weren't able to make the playoffs, like that would have been a clear drop-off. If they don't make the playoffs, I mean, it depends how the rest of the division works. If all of a sudden Cousins
is in
Denver,
if they don't make the playoffs this year, that's a disaster.
I can't disagree. I can't agree with that with Mahomes being the quarterback. I just can't feel that way.
I understand what you're saying. You're trying to give Pat Mahomes a wider berth than I'm giving him. And I wouldn't put it on him. I would put it on the Chiefs' inability to evaluate the team properly if this guy isn't ready to take this team to a playoff spot. That's a disaster for them. It doesn't mean you fire Andy Reid and blow up the whole team, but you'd consider it that you would make these moves and turn a playoff team into a non-playoff team. There's enough weapons around him and enough talent on defense, even though they need some help there.
Mm.
To get it done. The offensive line is actually pretty good. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
I'm not going to put the blame on Pat Mahomes. I would put it on Andy Reid. And they fired a GM. They traded their starting quarterback. They're trading their starting corner. They're making all of these moves to reshape the team to effectively make it better than it has been.
Mm-hmm.
Can you take a step back for 1 year and build it back up again? Sure. But Chiefs fans and others would not be happy with that. I'm more about consistency with coaching. Like, I'm a Steelers fan, so I'm used to that. I'm more about consistency at the head coaching position than not, and I do think Andy Reid is really good. He's got some holes in his game, but I think he's one of the best coaches in the league.
Mm-hmm.
So this is done. All these moves are done in order to try to get them ahead of where they're at. Now, he's a second-year guy who is a kind of a – it's like he took a redshirt year in the
NFL. He's a first-year starter.
So he's not – He's not a rookie. He's a first-year starter. But, you know, Carson Wentz was bringing this team to towards the Super Bowl in his second year. Dak Prescott got the Dallas to 13-3 in his rookie season. There are other recent successes that would lead you to believe that he could do this with this cast of characters. If they put it all on him, then that's too much. But
right.
I think there's an opportunity there. Let me ask you this. I don't think anybody's going to predict Pat Mahomes to be a top 12 QB.
Okay.
But in a two-quarterback league, would Pat Mahomes be the type of guy that you'd want?
Probably. I do think that Andy Reid is a very good coach, right? And if we're talking fantasy football, we don't have to worry about the playoffs being a disaster. I mean, at the end of the day, like, Alex Smith has been good the past few years. And the one thing about Mahomes is he is... I feel like he is going to kind of break some of what people feel about Andy Reid, like some of the conservative stuff that I don't think you can have with Mahomes, because that he's a big play type of guy. He's got the gigantic arm. He's going to keep plays alive with his legs. Alex Smith was able to do that, but maybe not as well as a Mahomes should. I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens as far as the turnovers go. Overall, though, I think in a 2QB league, I think you would see Mahomes drafted in most of those. I think he should be predicted as a top 24 guy. I would expect it.
Yeah, I think people are going to take a shot on him. I would probably stay away. I'm not a big believer in the Big 12 quarterbacks. I do see what people are talking about with Mahomes, but until a Big 12 quarterback comes in here and does it consistently, I'm sort of out on him. Doesn't mean that he can't be effective from a fantasy standpoint. Sam Bradford had some highlights in the past. So we'll come back. We'll keep talking football after this. We'll put the Marcus Peters thing to rest. But we'll talk about the other franchise tags that are being thrown out there. The quarterbacks are throwing at the combine. Does anybody care? We'll come back. Talking NFL with Kevin Walsh, Mike Blewett on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. If you're playing daily fantasy basketball on DraftKings or FanDuel this NBA season, you need to sign up for Daily Roto. Built by a team featuring millionaire maker winners and live final champions, Daily Roto's customizable projections, podcasts, strategy guides, and lineup optimizer will help you compete with the pros in a fraction of the time. Better yet, you can save 10% off using the promo code FNTSY. So go to dailyroto.com/premium to learn more about their product. I don't know what this is, but it's sort of like a metal.
Captain Considori has it rocking right now. I got to be honest with you.
Yeah,
kid's on fire.
Yeah, I don't need a sugar rush. I got Pete Considori's musical repertoire to keep me pumped. Speaking of being pumped, there's no more important marker on the fantasy baseball calendar than draft day. So there's no more important move to make than to get the 2018 RotoExperts.com exclusive Edge Fantasy Baseball Package. Get in-depth advice, rankings, and tips from the top ranker in all of fantasy sports, Jake Seeley. We're actually going to talk about one of his articles in the next hour. Go inside the numbers with multiple-time FSWA award winner Tim McCullough. Fantasy Hall of Famer Scott the King Angle brings you his award-winning insider series from the MLB Beat. And 2017 fantasy baseball champs Mike Florio and Joe Galina add to all the insights. Joe Galina coming up in the next hour, in the next show, I should say. Plus, this year's edition features a new cheat sheet generator and a Slack chat channel. So enter code FANTASY at checkout, enter code FNTSY at checkout for a discount, and make the ultimate move to win it all with the RotoExperts.com exclusive Edge Fantasy Baseball Package. That was a long read, but as you can see, we launched the exclusive Edge package this week, and I've already been diving into the articles. So it gets me ready for my upcoming drafts, whenever those may be.
It's a must have.
It is a must have.
If you want to be good, at least. I mean, and at the end of the day, you want to win championships. So you get the exclusive fantasy package.
Yeah, who wants to come in third place?
Not I.
I mean, if I get in third place in the luge, yeah, see? You're like the ugly American. You think the bronze medal stinks. It's amazing to have a bronze medal.
If you gave me a bronze medal, then I'd be okay coming in third place. But I would still be sitting there like, you know what? I could have had a gold medal if I got the exclusive edge package.
You don't want to be the Jaguars because they came in like third or fourth place, right? You just don't
should
want to
we,
be that.
We should have, should we have like a third place game in the NFL?
No.
Okay.
Nope.
I just toss it out there. I totally
games,
agree.
Third place games, unless they're for medals like this, are pointless. You know,
I agree.
Like even all right. So other news here. Obviously, we got guys getting hit with the franchise tags now. Jarvis Landry hit with the franchise tag. Some people have tried to be negative about Jarvis Landry and the fact that he's only a slot receiver. I put that in quotes. So, in any event, they are – people are trying to be negative about Jarvis Landry, and I'm telling you, I think he's one of the better receivers out there. Yes, he's in the slot, but I think he's immensely valuable to both the Dolphins and another potential team that may see him down the road. Your thoughts?
Well, I think one thing that the NFL is going to at some point accept is it's kind of how they've started to accept mobility from quarterbacks, and they've started to value it. Obviously, they don't want run first guys. That's why some people are still trying to make Lamar Jackson a wide receiver. But they've accepted, like, you need a quarterback to be mobile. I think that they're going to start to accept that the wide receiver of old, like the big, bulky, outside guy, possession receiver, maybe isn't going to be the normal receiver that you see, and we start to perhaps prioritize kind of route running and just the ability to get open, because a guy like Jarvis Landry is a terror and he's a consistent matchup nightmare. And I think when you so that's why like Antonio Brown is he's just this incredible route runner. He's always open, even when he's not open. And not that Jarvis Landry is Antonio Brown, but I just think like these type of receivers who wear slot receiver is kind of like almost a derogatory thing. It actually should be like a, oh yeah, this guy's going to consistently just grab me 100 balls, and that's exactly what we need. So I think he's great.
It's all painted in different ways too, because the Patriots really effectively used the slot receiver, obviously, right?
Right?
They went from Welker to Edelman and didn't miss a beat. Edelman could barely get the ball thrown to him, and then he's all of a sudden a 100-catch guy. And I think people just assume that these guys are less talented than somebody like Julio or A.J. Green or the like. And, like, yeah, Julio and A.J. Green are extremely elite, top-of-the-list wide-receiving talents. I think that goes without question. But to denigrate Jarvis Landry in some way, he had 112 catches this year for 987 yards. I think he's the first player ever to have over 100 catches but not reach 1,000 yards. So I get it. It's a low average per catch. So I understand that. But he had 9 touchdowns. He caught 112 balls on 160 targets, much of which are in traffic. He was working with Matt Moore. He was working with Jay Cutler. He gets Tannehill back. I do think that helps him, but like, will his stats change in a material way? Probably not. I think he could, if he had the same exact stats next year, that wouldn't surprise me. I say Tannehill helps him just because I think the team will be a little bit better offensively. Do I think Tannehill's way better than Cutler or Matt Moore? No. But they're dedicated to him, and I think Tannehill's a better talent than those two. Tannehill got hurt at a really bad time in his career.
Oh, yeah.
Because he was trying to make that leap, and then he tore his ACL. Now, like, I don't know. I mean, he's athletic, but he was trying to develop into more of a drop-back passer. I'm not a believer. I'm just saying I'm leaving the door open on Tannehill, at least. Some people have already closed that door. I'll leave the door open.
I think Miami, personally, we had this discussion last week where I think that Miami should maybe try and draft a quarterback, but I understand with the way that a lot of their money is positioned, it's tough to do that. Do you have – I don't know if there was a report on this, perhaps I missed it, but there were some people initially when they saw that Jarvis was tagged that they may still try to trade him. Do you think that that could be something that they do? Do you think that
I think everything is on the table for Jarvis Landry. I think they would conceivably take a first-round pick for him. I think they would willingly pay him because he is the best receiver that they have. Devontae Parker is obviously a big talent, but he hasn't shown an ability to be consistent both on the field or getting on the field, being healthy. So I think that's an issue. But, yeah, I think they'd be willing to do that because the Dolphins aren't so far off of the playoff hunt. I don't think they're good. I don't think they're good enough to win the Super Bowl, but they're not so far off of the playoff hunt that if they make a few moves, make a couple of good draft picks, that they improve and they could get to 10-6. That wouldn't be crazy for Miami, right?
I actually agree. I think that they could. That's part of the reason why I think that they should try to draft the quarterback, is because if they go into the year with Tannehill, then I feel like Gase is really going to be playoff or fired. So I feel like if he was able to grab a quarterback, so that's kind of the thing. There's talent there for sure. And if, like, that's one of the things, if they move on from Jarvis, it's then like, what now are your expectations? Like, does it have to be, I hate the cliche, I don't have a better way to put it, but does it have to be like a king's ransom for Jarvis? Like, do they need, if the Bears want a Jarvis, do they have to give up the 8th pick? Because that feels hefty for Jarvis Landry.
Yeah, it's a first round. Yeah, it's a
but
franchise.
Is the
tag,
so. What is it? 40 or maybe is it, what is it? Is it like the 40th pick? Like, is the 40th pick for Jarvis too much, too little, or just right?
Too little. So you're right on the quarterback thing, though. The Dolphins are one of those weird teams where they have a rock solid plan for 2018 and nothing after it.
Right.
The Dolphins are like that. The Bengals are like that, and the Jaguars are like that. And I'm making a concession that Bortles is okay to play come September. That his wrist is okay. But those three teams are in a weird spot. Like, if they went and drafted, well, do they risk it and draft a quarterback in the first round? Any of those three teams? I don't see it. But they could. I think, in fact, Mel Kiper had Josh Rosen maybe going to the Bengals at 11.
No, I think it was the Dolphins. He had him.
It was. That's what it was. You're right. It was the Dolphins. He had Tannehill going to, I'm sorry, Rosen going to the Dolphins at 11 because they don't have a long-term plan. And the Jaguars don't. The Bills don't. The Broncos don't. There's a bunch of teams that don't have long-term plans, but there's even more, a few curious ones like we've talked about these last few weeks, where they have something for 2018, and then after that, there's really nothing. You could conceivably throw the Steelers and Ravens and Giants in there too, but those other teams decidedly don't really have anybody. You know, the Flacco and Ben are at least there. They're longtime starters, but it gets a little dicey for those other teams because they need a long-term plan. You can't just say, well, this is what we'll do this year and then figure it out next year, when there's a whole bunch of quarterbacks that people like in this draft.
Did you see that the Bills may hang on to Tyrod? Are you surprised by that at all? And do you think that that'll hold? If they do, are they going to still make this big push to move up to the top of the draft for a quarterback?
That would surprise me if they hung on to him. But I can either take credit away or give them credit for this move. The Bills have assessed it season by season the last 2 years. They were going to get rid of Tyrod at the end of the 2016 season, looked around, realized he was the best option available to them, and brought him back. If they do the same thing this year, look around and say, we can't roll into the season with just Peterman and some sort of backup, then they look around, they assess what they want to do, and bring back Tyrod, because they don't want to give up any of the 6 draft picks. They think that they can maybe place guys elsewhere or draft somebody with one of those 6 draft picks without moving around. Just throwing names out, Kyle LaLetta and Mason Rudolph and White from Eastern Kentucky or Western Kentucky. And you know, maybe they do something like that. I don't know. I don't know. It's the draft process for them is going to be extremely important. But the problem is they might have to make a decision on Tyrod in the next 2 weeks before they even get a chance to draft anybody.
Let me ask you this. Of the four, assuming the 4 quarterbacks at the top are the only 4 that would be picked within the first 10 picks, Baker, Rosen, Allen, and Darnold. Of the 4, how many are you okay with starting opening day? Like, your plan is for him to start. Any of them?
Yes, because somebody can start on the Browns. I would rather start somebody like Darnold than Kaiser. But, yeah, some of them are going to take lumps. Like, if the Cardinals draft somebody and they don't fix that offensive line, they already released 2 of their offensive linemen. They need to fix that offensive line. So you're going to put a rookie in there behind a bad offensive line. Granted, David Johnson will touch the ball 400 times and take some pressure off of him, but they could be in a tough spot. I think it all depends. It's a fair question, and I think it's a question that I asked to Emery Hunt last week. But there's too many variables right now. AJ McCarron is an X factor in all of this, by the way. I think he's going to end up getting picked up by a team like the Bills. I'm not saying the Bills, but I think the Bills can use somebody like McCarron as a bridge to either Peterman or whoever they decide to draft. Basically the same strategy that the Bears employed, which may not work. And I don't love Trubisky, but the Bears had that. They had Glennon was the insurance policy. They gave him a bunch of money. They gave him a month to play, and then Trubisky was in. I could see a couple of teams employing strategies like that this year.
So that's kind of the reason why I asked, because if the Bills do make this move up to grab a quarterback, Donald Rosen, whatever it may be, if they're going to want to sit him for a year, they probably should keep Tyrod. I don't know if you're going to be able to get a cheaper option, a cheaper plus better option to sit in to have in front of your guy, right? Like AJ McCarron would cost way more than a Tyrod Taylor, and I also think that Tyrod Taylor is better than an AJ McCarron. So that right there is that. You'd feel better, I think, with Tyrod to stay healthy compared to a Bradford. I don't think that a team like the Bills would sign Keenum to pair with a young guy. So That's the reason why I ask, is if the guy they trade up for, they're not keen on starting day one, maybe it actually does make sense for them to let Tyrod have one more year and then move on from him.
Yeah, and taking the Bills, are you going to go out and sign A.J. McCarron to be your new bridge quarterback, or can you just keep Tyrod, a guy that's played with everybody there, as your bridge quarterback? It's okay. Like, it's okay to do that. Now, is Tyrod done with getting jerked around by the Bills? Maybe. He might be.
Yeah.
In fact, I have to check what the Tyrod cap situation is, because that's changed a couple of times in the last couple of years, and I just wonder if he's under contract right now, or can they get – is he free? I can't remember. He might be, like, restricted in some way. I'm checking it right now as I go to – I use overthecap.com as a resource. It's really good for all you fans out there that are kind of interested in this stuff, which I am. So, yeah. So they're going to have a lot of dead money on Tyrod. They would save – if they cut him pre-June 1st, they would save $9 million. But they'd have $8.6 in dead money on him. So he's got a base salary of $10 million. $1 million of it is guaranteed. Let me see if it's a post-June 1 cut. I'm going to bring this up for Tyrod as everybody can
If it is post-June 1 as you look for it there, though, then that means that they could conceivably keep him in-house until they could draft their quarterback and then make that decision, right?
So here's what they're going to do. Here's what they're going to do. Based on my research during the show, his post June one cut number is a $15 million savings. They'll have $3 million in dead money, so they could keep Tyrod around, draft somebody, do whatever they want to do, and then cut him.
Yeah,
McCarron seemingly less likely for me, because then they got a bunch of dead money. Plus they're paying McCarron. Plus they're going to draft somebody. It's too many. Too many variables. Plus, they can keep figuring out what they have with Peterman if they can figure anything out during the offseason. So.
And they could also, if they get that guy in-house and then they kind of figure it out. Remember how we mentioned that perhaps Foles could be in a situation where someone goes down and then people call the Eagles. They're like, hey, we'll give up first for Nick Foles. I don't know if people would be as high on Tyrod, but they could also then perhaps position themselves in a spot like that. So I guess then maybe Tyrod's not going to be in this mix as we're out here trying to predict, like, where are all these quarterbacks going to land. Tyrod might just be set in Buffalo until the Bills, at least, I guess on draft day he's in Buffalo and not, any sooner than that.
Based on that cap number, probably. They probably just keep him around, bide their time so they can draft somebody and then figure it out from there. But they are one of the teams that, does not seemingly have a quarterback at the moment.
At least not one that they like.
Outside Nathan. And the Jets thing, the Cousins thing, I've been talking about him to the Vikings as seeming less and less likely the more you read. And it seems like a Denver versus New York kind of thing. The Jaguars could come in over the top and surprise everybody, but I don't see that either. So we got Rich Terminello coming up. We're going to talk about the combine and some prospects. I want to get into the running back position a little bit, because we haven't done too much of that. It's been Barkley and nobody else, but it's that gap closing it all. It's Mike and Kevin on Fantasy Sports Today. We're back after this.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things. Just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
Back on Fantasy Sports Today with Mike Blewett and Kevin Walsh. We got Rich Sermonello coming up here in a minute. But first, a little bit about DKMS. You know, LeBron James is a four-time NBA MVP. Mike Trout is a two-time AL MVP. While you'll never be either, you can still be an MVP of your own because you can save someone's life. By going to DKMS.org today, you can learn what to do to help. 6 out of every 10 patients will not receive a bone marrow transplant. We want that to change, and it all starts with you. So at DKMS.org, you can register to become a bone marrow donor, and it only takes a minute. You sign up online, and DKMS will send you a swab kit. You swab your cheeks and send it back to DKMS, and that's it. It's that easy. Please check out DKMS.org/fantasy, F-N-T-S-Y, excuse me, DKMS.org/FNTSY and join the more than 950,000 others that have signed up to be bone marrow donors. So there you go. And we have with us my friend and college football expert, Rich Sermonello. Rich, how you doing, buddy?
Doing well. Big fan of DKMS, by the way. They do a tremendous job. So I would encourage anyone listening in the audience to go to that website and donate. It's a tremendous cause.
Absolutely. So Rich is the director of the College Awards Maxwell Football Club. He's co-host of College Football Today, which you find on this network each and every Saturday during the season from 9 to 12. It's also on Dish, Channel 262. You find him on Fantasy Sports Network. You also have the Maxwell Awards are coming up soon, right, Rich?
Yeah, very excited. Two weeks from now, 2 weeks from last night, I will be sitting down and interviewing with my buddy Phil Steele, Minka Fitzpatrick, and Baker Mayfield, two guys who obviously will be prominently featured at the Combine and the NFL Draft. So I'm very excited. We'll have some fun dignitaries there like Dan Marino, Bobby Bowden. It goes on and on. So good time in 2 weeks.
That's great. So that'll be in Atlantic City. So you check Rich's Twitter timeline, at Rich Sermonello. It is Sermonello, C-I-R-M-I-N-I-E-L-L-O. So first question, and it's actually not a straight football question. I want to get into the running backs. We'll get into the combine and the guys throwing and whether you care or not. We'll get into all that. But I want to ask you a general college sports question because it looks like college basketball, conceivably as we know it, could cease to exist.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to get your thoughts generally about if this type of stuff surprises you. Do you expect something like this to happen in college football? I just kind of want to get your general thoughts. Obviously, all these payments being made to players and slush funds and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I'd just love to hear your thoughts on it because you know so much about college football.
Yeah, it's a great question. Surprise, no. I think many of us knew it was a dirty little secret that was going on for many years. I don't know if we knew the gravity of it, Mike. I think that's what's been so alarming when the details come out. From the basketball side of things, it sort of has that that shock effect. It hits you between the eyes. If there was any innocence left in college sports, major college sports, namely basketball and football, it's now gone. The one thing that's a little bit surprising to me, and you touched on it, is I'm a little surprised that we haven't started to see some hints that have bled into the college football space. I don't think it'll be as pronounced. Particularly when you start to get into, like SEC country, there have been issues, there have been infractions, NCAA violations over the years. The SEC tends to be where that is mostly housed. I'm a little surprised it hasn't been as prominent up to this point, obviously because it's a passion and it's my career. I would be disappointed to see that happen. But when you put together two parties, on one side, well-heeled boosters, a tremendous amount of money that's being funneled into campuses and programs, and on the other side, you have these elite athletes, many of whom come from poverty, come from very poor backgrounds, very poor. We're not just talking about, you know, lower middle class. These are people that are surviving on a day-to-day basis. You put those two parties together, to think that there won't be those slush funds and money being going back and forth is really juvenile, to be honest.
Yeah, one quick follow-up. You know, it is, there was the Cam Newton situation, which I thought could have been a tipping point. There was rumors that Cam had been offered upwards of $180,000 by certain SEC schools that he didn't go to. And the NCAA kind of passed because Cam was on his way to the national championship game, Heisman Trophy. Yeah. The NCAA basically passed and said, hey, that was his dad's thing. Cam didn't know anything about it. And they let it go. And to me, I thought that was a real opportunity for the NCAA to flex their muscles. And I didn't think they wanted to disturb the golden goose. And they just let it go.
You know what company comes to mind when I think about these discussions? It's Enron. I think at this point, for many people, college sports is too big to fail. There's too much money that are filling the coffers of individuals, the NCAA, college campuses. I don't think anyone wants to crush that golden goose at this point. It might become inevitable. And then it's also going to dovetail, a good topic for another show for us. It's going to dovetail into the topic that won't go away, which is, should players be paid? Should there be compensation beyond just stipends and scholarships? That's a hot topic, Mike and Kevin, that is not going away. That's going to be with us, I think, for a very long time.
So, Rich, let's just transition a bit to this draft class. I want to ask you something that I was kind of talking about with Emery last week when we were talking about this running back class. I've seen some people say, even watching what this year's rookie running backs did, say that this year's running back class is deeper. I want your thoughts on that, and then I have a follow-up for that. So do you think that there's a chance that this running back class is deeper than the one that we just had?
I mean, there's a possibility. I think it's a little bit top-heavy at this point. I mean, I think once you get beyond Saquon Barkley, I'm a big fan of Darius Geis. Was not completely healthy last year at LSU. Rashad Penny, I mean, a fascinating story. Rashad Penny before last season was a backup. He was a complement to Donnell Pumphrey at San Diego State. Sony Michel, I think we talked about a couple of weeks ago when I was on, I like better than Nick Chubb at the NFL level. But once you get beyond Ronald Jones at USC, another back I really like, once you get beyond that sort of top five or six, you know, there are a lot of players that are still question marks around, Kev, like Bo Scarborough. Are we going to see the Bo Scarborough who tore up the college football playoff in 2016? But last year he kind of disappeared. You know, he took a backseat to Damian Harris. Or, you know, Josh Adams at Notre Dame. Interesting player. Had a lot of big runs for Notre Dame last season, but is sort of a straight-up runner. He's an easy target for defenders. So I think it's a good class. Saquon, though, you know, is at the top of it. I think there's a pretty significant drop-off after number one.
That's perfect, though, because there seems to be consensus that there is a drop-off. But is it worth it for, say, a team like the Browns or maybe the Giants or the Colts to take a Saquon Barkley at the, you know, within the top three picks of the draft or the top four picks, whatever it may be, if the second running back doesn't come off the board until the second round? Because there are, and I mean, mock drafts are mock drafts. You never know how things are going to go. People trade up. But there are people who feel like you could maybe get a Darius Geis in the second round, or Sony Michel, or whomever it may be. So do you think it's worth it? Because Emery, he made a very fair point. He's just like, listen, if he's the best guy, take the best guy. But you do have to get value. How do you feel towards that?
Yeah, I mean, there's always going to be two schools of thought, particularly when it comes to running backs. You know, you look at an Alvin Kamara, right? I mean, those of us who follow college football knew him back from his Alabama days, watched him closely at Tennessee. You could see the explosiveness that never really was able to get to the surface because he never got enough touches either at Alabama or Tennessee. He was a role player, kind of behind Jalen Hurd when he was in Knoxville, but you could see the potential. There are clearly backs out there like that. I mean, that has been the case when it comes to running backs in the NFL, time immemorial. You could find guys in the fifth or sixth round. Terrell Davis was, what, like a fifth or sixth rounder out of Georgia many years ago. Mm-hmm. Those types of players exist, and I can see that school of thought. Saquon, for me, though, I think is worthy of one of those top five picks because he is a true instant impact player. He's a disruptor when it comes to an organization. If you're close, or even if you're not close, obviously in the case of the Browns, I think he's such a complete player. Mm. He will impact your running game. He will impact your passing game. He will impact your locker room, your community. I think that highly of him, that he's that top five guy, but there clearly will be value, not just in the second round, but beyond that as well.
Yeah, I'm of the opinion that I would wait, even if he's, as some people say, a transcendent talent. I feel like every other year somebody tells me a guy is a transcendent talent. I get how talented he is, but I don't want to make a rookie running back the highest paid rookie. The highest paid running back in the league. That's why I have a problem with guys looking at the top of the draft and taking him. Now, if he's a final piece for your team, so be it. And with the Browns are a little bit of an exception because, first of all, they have tons of money, but they also invested in the offensive line last year. They don't do well playing from behind, so they need to kind of stay in front of people. They had DeSean Kizer playing in the hole 16 games in a row, basically, and we saw how that worked out. So I could see it making sense for them. If I were the Giants, I would not do it. I think it's a huge mistake. Until they fix that offensive line, you're going to put him back there, and he's going to struggle, and you're going to pay him a lot, and I just don't think it makes sense for
well,
me.
Well, let me throw a name out, too, Mike. Let me throw a name out to you, too. Just someone to keep an eye on in the next week as we start getting into combine season. Kalen Ballage, again, not a name that is top of mind for fans of college or even pro football, but Kalen Ballage is a player out of Arizona State who I think is going to tear up the NFL combine. He's someone who's projected as a middle round type player, has a chance to move up to like the second or third round, but it's that type of player, what you're talking about. We could be talking about on Sundays a Kalen Ballage being an 800 or 900 yard rusher, 8 or 9 touchdowns in his rookie season, complete back, great speed, great size. So to your point, there are going to be those players beyond day two that could have significant roles in the NFL.
I know the Chiefs are thrilled with Kareem Hunt, and they didn't have to go in the first round to get him.
Great point.
So, Kev, go ahead.
Then you mentioned the combine. Then who are some of the guys, maybe one, even just one guy, that you think we get to the combine and all of a sudden he's going to start flying up these draft boards? Because it happens every year. I remember last year, Obi Melanwenfu dominated, and all of a sudden people were like, oh yeah, he's got to go in the first round. Now, he didn't go that high because I guess people then started to maybe crack down more on the tape. But who is going to, or is there any guys that you feel like put in that dominant performance come combine time?
Well, Ballage is the one name I wanted to point out of Arizona State. You know, he sort of defies the typical back. Is he a speed guy? Is he a power guy? Can he work between the tackles or outside the tackles? He proved another compliment. He shared time with DeMario Richard at Arizona State. I think that's the one guy that I'm really eager to see him perform. But to sort of take a slightly different angle, Kev, one of the guys that I'm most fascinated to watch, we'll step outside of the quarterbacks for a while, but Arden Key is one of these players. He's kind of a hybrid defensive end, outside linebacker, was used in both areas by LSU, but in 2016 looked like a slam dunk, first round, top 10 pick, tremendous outside pass rusher, but had a rough senior season last year off the field. He left the program for a while, had some injury issues, had to have shoulder surgery, and then was ineffective in Baton Rouge last season. So Arden Key is one of those guys that, you know, NFL teams are going to be watching very, very closely to see how he performs in Indianapolis.
That's an interesting one. And I feel like we got a few edge rushers that people are salivating about. Marcus Davenport out of UTSA. I think if he puts up a big combine, he's going to kind of solidify himself in that top 10. And look, you get a pass rusher. There's four things that people need in the NFL. You need a QB, you need a pass rusher, you need a left tackle, and you need a corner. And they are not in, they are not coming into the league in droves in any kind of way. So if you get a few guys that you feel like can really get it done, then Arden Key, as you said, will shoot up the boards. We're with Rich Ciarmonello. He's director of College Awards, Maxwell Football Club. He's the co-host of College Football Today, and we have him as a guest here regularly to talk about college football and the combine. So one thing on the QBs, does it matter to you at all that they're throwing? I mean, I don't even care anymore. These guys all end up doing pro days anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was kind of weird 3 years ago. I thought it was strange when, you know, the Johnny Manziels and Teddy Bridgewaters decided not to throw. I thought it was an odd decision. You know, you're not going to be able to create an ideal situation. You could do it at your pro day, but once you get to Sundays, you know, ideal situations do not exist. So I think the concept of not throwing at Lucas Oil Stadium is rapidly becoming extinct, which I think is a good idea. But to see them in a hermetically sealed setting throw, I can tell you exactly what's going to happen right now. You know, Baker Mayfield's going to look kind of short compared to the rest of the guys. Josh Rosen's going to throw beautiful balls. Josh Allen will be able to throw it about 90 yards, and Sam Darnold will look sharp in all regards. I think we know exactly what we're going to get. You may get some surprises a little bit later. You know, some of the Luke Faulks and such, it'll be fun to watch. Mason Rudolph, out of Oklahoma State, guys, I don't think is getting quite enough attention. I think he's someone who could make up some ground, possibly move into the top five, depending on how he performs.
Yeah, so I'm out on the Big 12 QBs until they get it done. Baker, yeah. Mason Rudolph alike. I appreciate the fact that I saw Mason Rudolph throw for 400 yards in the first half of a game this year. But as you and I have talked about in droves, I'm not really into Big 12 football. At some point, somebody's got to make a stop, and I'm not that impressed that you threw for 550 yards because the other team wasn't defending you. I think Rudolph
and the systems are kind of cushy as well. I mean, they are sort of pass happy, wide open. Oklahoma State has like 8 wide receivers who will play in the NFL at some point.
And it's even harder to evaluate those offensive linemen. They're in 2-point stances all the time, just.
Yep.
Sort of pass blocking with a huge cushion. So, in any event, that's great stuff from Rich. We'll be doing some combine content a little bit later next week. And appreciate you joining us. Thanks, Rich.
Love the guys. Have a good weekend.
Okay, so Kevin and I will come back, get a little bit of a reaction from the combine stuff, and transition over to Major League Baseball content. Talk a little bit about the NBA, Jimmy Butler. What does that mean? It's Mike and Kevin on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We'll be back after this.